45 this year, and it's been a season of reflection for me, and I'm looking back on things that I thought were a mess, and I'm seeing God's kindness in them, and that's part of what we want to, I just want to talk about today.
Everything broken, but you were there. I've wandered at heaven's gate.
Instrumentation of this song as much as I am the words. Strings, a French horn, a xylophone, a banjo. That's just thinking outside of the box, you know. Such a great song. My name is Andrea Replogle, and I am a mom. I have worked pretty hard to try and figure out how to introduce myself because I don't really have a lot of titles nowadays. But that is not a title I thought I would ever actually get, is a mom. And I'm kind of blown away that I'm a mom in a lot of different situations. Obviously, I'm a mom and a wife with my own family, but I'd say I'm kind of a mom to our worship team, some Ball State folks here. I think that's kind of my role. I'm a mom on Sunday morning. I hug one girl after another, and they're waiting for it. Like, if I am not hugging people, there's a problem. I'm surprised how much of a mother I am to my children's friends. Sadly, there's a lot of broken families around us, and I don't think we're atypical. A lot of teenagers looking for a place to belong, and my kids are teens now, and my daughter has a boyfriend, and he's become kind of adopted son to us, and to understand where I've come from and to see where I'm at now is kind of mind-boggling to me. And you know, whenever you try and tell a story, you have to kind of go back and set the stage. And the truth is that it's a good story because a lot has been overcome. So you have to kind of tell how bad it was at the front end. But I'm not really into parent bashing, and I want to be sensitive to that. So I'm going to tell you the happy ending first. The happy ending is that I became a believer in college at the age of 20 at U of I, and very excited about the gospel, took it home to my family, which they completely rejected. And my grandmother, a couple years later, 3 years later, went on staff, met a pastor who witnessed to my grandmother 2 months before she died, and she got saved. And met some people that befriended my family, and my mom started going to church and just was real struck and cared for and the kindness of the people there. But my mom eventually became a believer as a result of Gamblers Anonymous. My father, over time, became a believer as a result of having a quadruple bypass and then having a heart attack a week later and having to be resuscitated. And in his testimony, he talks about how God had to kill him twice to get his attention. My brother recently became a believer through Alcoholics Anonymous. And so let's just say we are familiar with the 12-step process in our home. And the beauty of all of that, not just that I get to spend eternity with my family, which has always been my heart's cry since becoming a believer, is my children don't know those people I grew up with. And so they're almost fictional characters in my home because God has done so much in my parents' lives. And I'm so thankful. And I know they are too, that they get to be the grandparents that they were never able to be the parents. Those parents. A lot of times when I do this seminar, I tend to make it pretty factual. There's a lot of information associated with homosexuality, but I've purposely changed our whole setting here. And if you fall asleep, I'm not going to take that personally. It's been a great conference, but it is a grind, is it not? I understood I was taking a chance by lowering the lights and putting down pillows. But I don't want it to be an infomercial, you know. There's a lot of books you can read and get the facts, and there'll be some facts here, but I want to tell you what happened. And what happened was I was, my parents got pregnant with me at the age of 19, and my father, a few days after they got married, my mom's 6 months pregnant, and a few days after I was born, my father was sent to Vietnam. And that's a tough way to start any marriage, much less a marriage racked with alcoholism already and coming from both sides of the family and just all kinds of dysfunction. And so when I entered into that situation as a little girl, I really believe that my parents tried, that they wanted to love me. But I got lost very early on and wounded deeply very early on. And my house was always full of anger, always a lot of yelling and fighting and a lot of drinking and a lot of rage. My mother was a very tightly wound woman growing up who you just never knew where she was going to snap, you know? Just on eggshells all the time. And in my healing journey with the Lord over the years, I've realized that that convinced me that being a girl was just too damn dangerous in my house. And so let's just not do that. And a lot of homosexuality comes down to a break in the same-sex relationship with the parent. Not always, but it's often there. You know, my father's alcoholism was definitely a contributing factor in my crushed little heart. My heart that yearned to be cared for, to be rescued, to be noticed, to be safe. And I can remember pretty vividly in eighth grade saying, "We're done. We're done. We're not going to keep asking for this anymore." And I had a lot of forts as a kid. I was building forts. And I had a fort by my bed. I had a fort in the backyard. As a teenager, we moved, and I had a fort in these woods to the point where in college, if I got overwhelmed, I'd just drive 3.5 hours home and go to the woods. Like, that's just what I did. And that's how I dealt with life. But by the time I was in college, I was really lonely. You know, the isolation that you take on to protect yourself is also the isolation that slowly kills you. I love sports. I'm a motorcycle driver. I've just always gravitated towards the things of men anyway. And I'm a really good drywaller. Not a lot of women can say that. I think looking back, I definitely just wanted time with my dad. And so he was the safer of the two parents. And that's what I did is... I probably leaned towards that stuff already, and so I simply took on the world of men as a way to spend time with my father, but also to stay away from my mother. So for me, by the time I got to college, I was just really lonely. And there's no God growing up. We didn't do church or any of that kind of stuff. And so I started playing rugby at U of I, and met the gay world and thought, wow, maybe this is what I've been missing all along. Like, I can see myself fitting into this one. Like, I've never found a place to belong here. I've never fit into the girls. I've never fit in with the guys. I've had crushes, but I never did the dance thing. All that girl stuff. I just thought, man, you guys waste a lot of time in that bathroom. I got things to do, you know? I got places to be. So for me, you know, I entertained that idea largely because there was no morality to push against it, but also because it was very attractive. Didn't feel like anybody recruited me into it. I just enjoyed those people and felt like I belonged. And then I fell in love with a gal, and I really loved her. And I felt a part of my heart come alive that I had died a long time ago. And she was a Christian, and I wasn't. And we talk about God from time to time, but I could always make her look like a fool because I had a degree in evolution, and so she'd always end the conversations with, "Well, I love Jesus," and that's just all I can say. And I'd be like, "You are a moron," because it's pretty antagonistic atheist. Felt a need, kind of like Paul, to free those stupid Christians of their slavery, back on campus, and she broke off the relationship. That was a big piece of it all for me. But back on campus, you know, still involved with that, I met a group of Christians. And then looking back, it's so striking to me because they shared the gospel with me. They invited me into their home. We rode motorcycles together, you know. We did all kinds of stuff, and they loved me really well. And I eventually read the Bible and met Jesus. And after I got saved, well, I remember reading the word and seeing that, oh, if I get saved, I can't be gay. Crap. You know, like, I really wanted to just keep being gay. I liked it. It was enjoyable. And it met a need in my heart and it felt like I knew who I was finally. You know, I've heard people say that the coming out into the gay world is a very similar experience to getting saved. Now, they are very different spiritually, but they feel very similar. And the truth was my mom tells stories of me ripping dresses off my body at the age of like 2 or 3. Like, I rejected femininity at a very young age. And so I've just been a woman at war with that for a very long time. And when I got saved, the three women who largely led me to Christ had all been in the gay world. And not once had we ever talked about being gay, because I was keeping that on the down low. You know, I was really hiding that from them. They're all, you know, one was a shop porter for U of I. Like, where were, how narcissistic was I that I did not notice that the woman who was talking to me about Jesus, who had been a shop putter, might have struggled with homosexuality at some point. It's like, whatever. Anyway, they were really a tremendous women, and I was so thankful for them. But I was always struck with that it wasn't about the gay thing, it was about the Jesus thing on the front end. But then that's when my journey started. And what's interesting is that I can sit here and tell you tons and tons of stories of the ways God has brought me into what he intended. And I think that's the main element that I want to communicate, is that you're not born gay. It's just a lie. And the world is pushing real hard on that button now. They're really trying to sell that. The It Gets Better movement is just, I understand why they're there. I understand they're trying to address, you know, gay teenage suicide. And certainly that should be addressed. But you don't address it by lying to people. And the truth is that God has something better. And when I accepted my identity as a gay person, it was enough, because I had spent my whole life starving to death. And I didn't know there was a banquet table. All I knew was there were crumbs, and I was willing to accept the crumbs. And that's, looking back, it didn't feel like that. It felt like I had found the banquet table. But now, seeing what God has done, and where what he really intended in terms of blessing me with a husband and a family, and this abundance of freedom and the fear and the loneliness that has been overcome in my heart, I'm amazed at how little I was willing to accept, because I was starving to death. And that's the way I see it. I see the gay world as doing the best they can with the pain of the world. And everybody deals with pain, and everybody deals with it in their way, and this is one way we deal with our pain. And so you might find this amusing, but I'm actually going to tell you one big story, and that's the story of my wedding dress. Didn't see that coming. there's so much redemption, and just sitting here and reflecting on all that God has done is very humbling for me and very overwhelming. And my hope is to just give you hope, whether you're a struggler or a helper. I just want you to have hope, because God can do this. But the hope comes from Philippians 1:6, that the he who has began a good work in you will bring it to completion. That God is the author and perfecter of your faith. That there isn't this one path you get on and then you get to the freedom place. Like, he is going to orchestrate something. And that's, I'm sure you've caught that message in this whole conference. That, you know, it might be through crushing dreams that he orchestrates that. It might be through, you know, salvation. It comes from so many different places. But pain is a big piece of it all. And I hate that. I really wish that was not true, but it is so true. Because my goal was just to minimize the pain. I was done with pain. I've had more than enough pain. No more pain, thank you very much. And God's goal was for freedom. It is free for freedom that Christ has set us free. That's it. That was it. No hidden agenda. No, so you can be better with the gospel, so you can see more people get saved, so you can be a better servant. Just for freedom's sake, that Christ has set us free. And it's a beautiful verse. And God's goals have been very different, and so the path he has taken me on has been so difficult at times and so hard. But I'm looking back now in my 40s at this journey and seeing this whole new narrative underneath that I was completely unaware of at the time. And so I feel like my wedding dress is a good example of that story. Or is a good story to set that example. Having grown up in that home, my dreams were largely crushed. I never wanted to get married. I never wanted to have kids. It was just all broken to me. And I wanted to save the pandas and go live on a mountain. And that was what I was getting my degree in. And I had every intention. My grad school was picked out. I mean, I am a go-getter kind of gal. And so I can get stuff done. And I got saved right there, kind of at the critical point. And then felt like getting saved meant walking into a blank room, and I lost everything. My major, my future, the woman I loved, the gay world that I was enjoying. Like, I just lost everything with just the promise that I would be loved and cared for, and the truth of the gospel. And so when 3 years later, when I found myself on the edge of liking a man and him liking me and us thinking about marriage and me having conversations with God about, really? Like, don't you think it's a little premature? Like, we're just getting started here, and it seems like there's a lot of work to do. Don't you think I should be a little further along in my, like, liking being a girl part? Like, I don't really like that part still, and so maybe... Like, I just had a lot of conversations with God about that. Like, I don't know if you're doing this right. I think you might be off on this. And so, but I really wanted to get married in terms, well, I didn't really want to get married. I wanted to have sex, and I wanted to be with that guy. And so, that's the package deal. You have to get married for those things. But, so we got engaged, and you know, and now it's the thing most women spend their whole life dreaming about. At least a lot of them that I've met, not everybody. You know, the big dress, the big event, the everybody's eyes on you, the, you know, say yes to the dress stuff. And and all I could think was, just get through it. Just get through it. Like, just rent everything you can rent and spend the day in a clown outfit and get to the honeymoon. You know, like, that was all it was to me, because I just stopped dreaming, and I didn't want to be a girl. I didn't want those things, and it was all so new and foreign to me, and I felt like a third gender my whole life, really. I never felt like I was a girl or a boy, you know. I just was there and lost. And even as a new believer, I was believing it, but I couldn't feel it, you know. And so I found a place I could rent my dress, which I think is freaking genius. But I was also able to rent my bridesmaids' dresses. And that's even more freaking genius. Anyone who's been in a wedding knows I have done you a great service, my bridesmaids. Anyway, so it's a little shop in Champaign, Urbana, and I'm in the checkout one time at a store, and I see Bride magazine, and I think, oh, I'm a bride. I can buy that now. And but I'm like, it's so irrelevant. Like, I'm working out of this one shop in Champaign, Urbana. I'm just going to rent it. It's not a big deal. Like, it's just not something I ever sat and dreamed about or thought about, or I just wanted to get through it, you know, and it's a big event with a lot of to-dos. That's all it was. And try and minimize how much money you spend. You know, that's just all it was to me. But I picked up Bride magazine, and I looked through it, and I found a dress that I really loved, and I was kind of stunned, because I don't wear dresses as a general rule, and certainly not at that time. And it had cleavage, and I was real uncomfortable with that. And so, but it was beautiful, and I really loved it. And there was this little well of hope kind of come up in me, and I thought, nah, it's not gonna happen. So just let it go. And the day came to go try on dresses. And the truth is I only let one person in that room to watch me try on dresses. And it was somebody I trusted implicitly, my matron of honor and her little two-year-old girl. And my matron of honor is just one of the sweetest people on the planet. I describe her as sunshine. And that's what she was. She was affirming and positive as she could possibly be. And it was one of the worst days of my life, because I felt so gross the whole time I did it. The whole time, every time I looked in that mirror, I just wanted to rip it off me and get out of there. And because I couldn't embrace it. It was so yucky for me. Because it's something I had spent my whole life rejecting and keeping a distance from, my femininity. and just constantly at war with. And it was a really bad day, to the point where I did everything else on my to-do list for the wedding, and I still didn't have a dress, you know, a couple months before the wedding. And I'm like, all right, I just need to go back and do this and just get it done. Just close your eyes and hold your breath and get it done. And I remember going to the store, and, you know, and hope is difficult to kill. And I remember thinking, I wonder if that dress is here. And it's like, that's just statistically not possible. Like, that's just not going to happen. So could you just not be stupid and hope about things that are statistically improbable? But I got to the store, and I, you know, hope welled up, and I went and looked, and it was there. And it was one size too big for me, which was this huge blessing, because I didn't have to diet or anything. Like, I could just let myself go for, like, 2 months. I'm like, I actually need to grow a little bit to fill out this dress, you know? And I got my dress, and I... At the time, it was this beautiful kindness of the Lord to overcome the statistical improbability. You know, like it was, I was an atheist. Like, I needed evidences of the supernatural in my life. Like, that's all I was trying to do a lot of times was, are you really there? Am I deceived? You know, like, that was as far as we were getting. We hadn't dived into a lot of the girl stuff yet. And so, dove in, whatever, I don't know if the word is. But I look back now, you know, 20 years later, and I see this totally different narrative underneath, where God is caring for my heart. Because at the time, there's not enough self-awareness to say, oh, I feel bad because I'm uncomfortable with my gender, and I da-da-da. Like, that, you don't have that self-awareness always when you're a young woman. And so all I knew was, get me out of here and get this off of me. And don't make me do this again. And I feel stupid and gross and embarrassed. And why can't I be like all the other girls? And why is this so hard? And it was just endless and embarrassment and hurt and more hurt. And I look back on it now, and I see not a God who just does really cool stuff to convince you he exists, but a God who cares for your heart by not making you go through it twice. You know, like, I didn't have to try on dresses again. I just got my dress that I secretly hoped for, but was too afraid to ask for. And that's the God we serve. Like, that's the God who, like Neil said the other morning, is always doing us good. And I look at my journey out of homosexuality, and I don't really accept the titles of gay and ex-gay. They don't really work for me, and I see it as somebody who chose this path, and it didn't feel like a choice. It felt like this is what I was intended for, honestly. And until God intervened, I didn't know what I was intended for. I was just trying to deal with the pain, you know? And a lot of us deal with the pain in a lot of different ways, and this is just, this was my way, because we just don't live alone, you know. Not created that for that, and I've struggled with homosexuality after getting married. It didn't go away because I started having sex with a guy. That's not part of the deal. It's a deep pain in my heart as a result of many things, but largely the fear of being a girl, because being a girl is very vulnerable, you know. I don't know if we think much about it, but marriage is supposed to be this picture of all the attributes of God on display. You know, it's a husband and wife, and we see Jesus, who was in the fullness of truth and grace, and that Jesus himself displayed all the attributes of God. And that's the idea of marriage. It's the beauty of marriage, is that when a man and a woman come together, they offer the children of that home the fullness of God, the fullness of his attributes. And, you know, it doesn't have to be, these are all the girl attributes and these are all the guy attributes. You know, I think that's a little pigeonholed, but that fullness is supposed to be that safety net for those children to grow up in. And that was all broken and fractured for me And God is overcome that, and he's done these amazing things. And I look at my kids now, and they're not by any means perfect, but I think, how did we do that? Like, how did we not just totally screw this up, you know? And and how did I marry such a good man? And how have I been able to actually share my femininity with my daughters? How do I have two girls that are night and day from one another, and they both are fine with it? Nobody's at war with themselves, and it's something I've had to fight for over the years and take God's hand, because I really just wanted one person to just be with me the whole time, you know? Like, just, who's that person who's going to help me get out of this, you know? Who's that one person? Because having grown up in that setting, and I think embracing that world, there's just this, you're so used to rejection that you're so done with it, and you spend so much time trying to minimize how much pain keeps coming in the door. I see people do this all the time when I sit with other people trying to come out of the gay world, that they're trying to just take one chance, and if that doesn't work out, we're done, you know? And it's like, yeah, I know that's what you want to do, but it's not going to work out, because it's exactly the opposite of what God's trying to do. And he's trying to show you that a lot of people will care for you, and that you need the body of Christ, not just one person. And the truth is when I have latched on to that one person, I've destroyed that relationship, just eaten them alive, because I think they can do everything. And I haven't personally fallen back into homosexuality, but I've been tempted many times, and I've been emotionally dependent in relationships, and I've just made a mess of things. And I see that those are all steps along the way. You know, I'd like to tell you could read a book and then it'll all work out for you, but it's just, it doesn't work that way. You know, he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it. And that path is probably not the path you think it's going to be, but it will work. And it didn't, for a long time, it was, I believe, God, I believe, but I cannot feel it. I cannot feel it. Please help me feel this. I want to like being a girl. I don't want to just spend my whole life making good choices. I can't live there forever. And I got these two little girls clipping on my heel. And I know enough about parenting and about multiplication that people know, they know what you are, not just what you tell them, you know? And children mimic their parents as to who they are, not what you say. A disciple, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. And for me to spend all that time telling my girls, oh, it's good, being a woman is good, and to never feel it, to never embrace it myself, is a lie. And so to just run after God and ask him to do that work in my life has been my heart's cry for so long, so that I could offer something better to my kids. And the truth is I've struggled with anger probably as much as my mother did. And I was real close to hitting my kids at different points when they were little. And God used those things to drive me to the foot of the cross, because I scared myself. And to drive me into the arms of other believers to just say, please help me. I can't do this. I'm in a way over my head here. And to desperately seek my God to rescue me. Because I understood that I was just broken. And so let me stop there at this point, because I think I'd like to, can I collect your cards? If you have questions, if you could just send those in to me here, we'll look at a few of those. But I'm fine to address both sides, the struggler and the helper, because I think you're here for one of those two reasons. And that's fine, and that's beautiful to be either one, to be honest. I'm currently in a season of writing, and one of the things I want to do is just write a book for the struggler, because I just don't feel like there's a lot of good stuff out there, and there's some good stuff, but I really would have appreciated if somebody could have just written something and said, sometimes it's hard because it's hard. Like, I would have really appreciated knowing that on the front end, because it's a hard work that we're trying to do. We're trying to fill in broken places, but the truth of that is also, so is everyone else. Like, everybody's trying to fill in broken places, you know. When I work with women, sometimes I see the same lie used by Satan on both sides of the fence. I see older women say, well, I don't want to bother the younger women. I don't, you know, they're so busy and so on and so forth. And I see younger women say, well, I don't want to bother the older women. They're so busy and da da da. And I get so pissed off by that because I think Satan doesn't even have to work at it. He just throws the same lie into two different groups and it's completely effective. And I'm like, I think it's the same with us in that as a helper, you think, well, I don't really understand, so I don't want to get involved too deep where I might hurt them or, you know, I might say something stupid. And the struggler says, well, nobody really understands, and so I really can't ask for help, and da-da-da. Like, it's the same lie that keeps those two worlds apart. And the truth is I'm blessed when I meet with other strugglers because I think they do understand some things, and they get it a little bit better. But I don't, you know, 85% of our journeys are all pretty much the same. Whether it's abortion in your past, or divorce, or drugs, or, you know, depression, or whatever it is, God is giving us the tools to care for one another by just the example of Christ. And so don't let Satan push you away as a helper, but don't let him push you in as a rescuer either, because the truth is everybody's got their own journey and you have to let that play out. But this isn't a counseling session. This is a seminar on homosexuality. Sarah, could you collect up people's cards for me real quick? So we'll get to some of these questions here. I did have somebody who asked a question in the last session, and it was so sweet and so honest. I just wanted to honor it. And his question simply was, does it get easier? You know, there are better days and there are bad days. And I think my mother's heart just desperately wants to say, yes, it will. I promise it'll get easier, but that's not entirely true. But once again, I don't know that it's true for any of us. You know, I don't think it's not specific to the gay world. I think, you know, I'm in a season right now with my mother who I went through so many years of desperate anger towards my mother, like to the point where she sent me a plant once for Mother's Day, and I purposely let it die because I just needed to rage against it all, and I would not let anyone in our house water it. And I walked past it every day and wished its death. And so, you know, anger begets anger pretty quickly. But it was helpful to my forgiveness process. but my mother has Alzheimer's now, and the anger subsided a few years ago before she was diagnosed with that. And I'm extremely thankful that we're out of that stage, because I want to be able to care for my mom. Thanks, Zach. I want to be able to care for my mom, and I, you know, I can't do everything. It's hard for me to be real physical with my mother still, even now. But even there's this beautiful underlying narrative in the midst of her Alzheimer's, is that she was such a critical woman growing up and so angry oriented that the kindness that I desperately desired and tenderness just was unavailable to me, and I wanted to, and I couldn't find it, you know, so I stopped looking for it as a child, but now that my mother has Alzheimer's, she's kind, and she's very quick to tell me she loves me and tell me I'm doing a great job, and she'll do that like 5 times in 5 minutes because she doesn't remember she just did it, and there's sadness with that, but there's also a kindness in that, and it feels pretty good. To have your mother tell you you're doing a good job as a mom. And so, so does it get easier? It doesn't, but that's just life, and that's why we long for heaven.
where there's no more sorrow and no more pain. Okay. How does your husband best support and love you through your struggles? He does that by not taking it personally, because it doesn't have anything to do with him. If I'm struggling with homosexuality, it's not about his masculinity or lack of it. Thank you, Sarah. It's about the holes in my heart from growing up. And so that's the best way he helps me, is he just doesn't take it personally and complicate the issue by getting offended by things that aren't his fault and he can't fix. I'm going to skip that other question. I'm sorry, I should have brought my glasses. That's terrible. Do I believe there's any nature or predisposition to homosexuality, or is it all nurture? Well, nobody's going to be able to answer that question. That's the basis of behavioral science. But you can't answer that question in anything, whether it's alcoholism or, you know, anything with a behavioral element to it just can't be answered specifically. All nature, all nurture. Like, you know, I look at my my oldest daughter. She was 2 years old. She was walking in front of me and a girlfriend, and she fell. And we were like, oh, and then she got up and she took her nook out of her mouth and she whipped it on the ground because she was pissed that she had fallen. And I looked at my girlfriend and I was so scared all of a sudden. Like, I thought I learned all that anger from my mother, but she's two. Like, how could she have learned this already? She's mad. She hurt herself. Like, it was very natural response. And so I can't answer that question with any, you know. I am struck that the same circumstances with different people yield different results. Like, my mother, her mom was a bad alcoholic, and there was a lot of rejection and brokenness in that relationship. And so why did she never struggle with homosexuality? I don't know. And why was that something I have? I don't know. Different day and age, different cultural norms, different predispositions in terms of my desire and just enjoyment of masculine things. Like, I really enjoy riding a motorcycle. I really enjoy, I like to work for Habitat for Humanity, Women's Builds. I enjoy framing houses. Like, I just enjoy that stuff. And so, never really my mom's interest. So, it's a complicated thing, and that's why I don't try and oversimplify it with the nature-nurture argument. Oh, how did you tell your husband about your past relationship? I just said I was gay. And he was like, okay. I don't think I'm gay anymore, but I mean, I'm not really sure how that's going to play. So we just put our cards on the table. That's all I'm telling you. How do you victoriously overcome same-sex attractions and not just continuously suppress them as a believer? That's a very good question. I do think, you know, in our day and age, we're so emotion and feelings oriented that it's really difficult to tell a group of young people that there's value in obedience, because I think it's misconstrued that we just throw our emotions out the window. And I'm not saying that at all, but I am saying that a lot of Christianity and a lot of walking with the Lord is making good choices. And that's in all kinds of areas. That this is just one area. You know, I have to make a choice to let my teenager bang her head against the wall with her boyfriend and not try and just fix it. You know, like, we have to constantly go kind of beyond what we just naturally want to do and trust the Lord. But at the same time, I will be on my knees in desperate prayer for my daughter, too, because I don't want to see her hurt the way she hurts. But I understand that the pain has a process to do. And, you know, we homeschooled our kids, and this semester we sent them all to public school. My oldest went a couple years ago, and I joked with friends that I spent the first 2 weeks of school you know, getting up in the morning, packing their lunches, making little really cool notes, encouraging everybody every day, and then sending them on the bus, and then going upstairs and sleeping for 4 hours every morning because I was so sad that they were gone, and I loved homeschooling them, and I love my kids, and I enjoy spending time with them, and the public school takes way too much time to be with them. But my point is that we have to run to Jesus with our pain, you know. So I don't encourage you to suppress pain at all. I encourage you to make good choices, but then go to Jesus with your pain. And that's a whole seminar on how do we do that practically. And that's a very good question, and you'll spend your whole Christian life trying to figure that out. Because the reality is, and you don't want to hear this, but this is what's true, is that the pain you're experiencing now, and there are bad pains when you're young. I am not in any way diminishing the severity of those pains. But life gets more painful as you get older, because you care more, because you love more, because you invest deeper in people. You know, I watch friends go back to the gay world and it breaks my heart. I watch friends walk away from Jesus and it breaks my heart. And people I've worked with for years who are unfaithful to their wives, and I, you know, like, and then people die, and like, it gets harder. And so that's what it means to walk with Jesus. I'm sorry, that sounds like terrible news, but that's why God is probably so fervent in his desire to care for our hearts and to restore us, because he knows it's going to get harder. You know, as a parent, that's all I'm doing with my kids, is I'm trying to equip them for a world I know will beat the crap out of them. And I'm trying to love them as much as I can as long as they're under my roof, because I know it's going to get harder. And I'm hoping I'm giving them what they need to endure it, and I'm introducing them to their Savior well enough that they can hold on to him in the midst of that pain. But I don't know people's paths, and neither do you. You don't even know your path, you know? So, I hope that answers that question. How often do you talk to people that deal with same-sex attraction that are guys? A lot. Actually, this has been one of the safeguards God's put in my life, is he's brought a lot of gay men into my life instead of gay women, and so I talk a lot to gay men. And I have to tell you, I have such a deep mother's heart for gay men, because I won't be able to say this without bawling, but, you know, I understand, once again, I understand what the gay movement is trying to do. It is, if you believe you're born gay, and you have been felt this your whole life, and you see the injustice in society and the way they treat you, and you don't have the simple rights, you know, I've watched gay couples go through divorces, which isn't obviously a real divorce, and I've watched one side get totally taken to the cleaners by the other side because they have no rights. And so I'm not advocating any policy here. I'm just saying I've watched the injustice of all this stuff play out. I've watched domestic abuse issues in the gay world, which you're not even allowed to really talk about that in the gay world because it makes the gay world look bad, you know? And people, they're dealing with domestic abuse just if not more than we are, but it, no one will talk about it, but it's there and it's real, and those people need to be loved and supported. And we're not even, as Christians, we're like, well, you know, chose to be gay, and it's like, what, did you just say that? You know, we're here to bind up the wounded and the brokenhearted, and so there's a lot of broken and wounded people in that world, and so, and they end up taking care of themselves because we're not taking care of them in a lot of ways as the church. And my heart goes out to gay men because there's such a strong push now, particularly in schools, for them to declare at a young age. You know, my kids are in middle school and high school, and in middle school there's kids talking about being bi and gay, and I'm like, middle school? Seriously? Like, you're 12. You're 12 years old and you're gay. Like, you've already accepted that identity. And you believe, and we're teaching you as a young man that God created you to have anal sex your whole life, Like, that's what he created you for? And it will destroy your body? And you'll, chances of dying are, you're statistically, you'll die 15 years younger than your heterosexual counterparts? Like, God intended that? Like, that's the hand of a loving God to a young boy? That's horrible. That's really horrible that we're lying to them about that. And then we're encouraging them to be happy about it. It gets better. That's what the world's offering them. It gets better. You know, some of you are familiar with Dancing of the Stars, and Chaz Bono was on there, and some of you may not even know his backstory, but he was Chastity Bono, Cher's daughter. And I read her book before she had her sex change, and it's a really sweet book. And her goal in the book was to kind of show how there's no pattern to homosexuality. And it's funny, if you read the book, it actually shows a pattern. But it's a sweet book, and it's very compassionate, and it's very loving. But to look at Chaz now and to see someone so at war with themselves and to have in my head the pictures of the little girl with the blonde hair, she's a really cute little girl, and to see what the world has told her to the point where she had a sex change and totally rejected that and has pumped her body full of endless drugs to try and take on attributes of a man. And I mean, it's just so sad to me. I see God's creation being completely destroyed, and it's the result of lies. But how is that not true in all kinds of areas, right? Heterosexual sex, boys and girls hooking up at the age of 13. Are you kidding? 13? You do not know squat about who you are, much less who that is or what you're doing. I worked in a crisis pregnancy center for a while, and just talking with kids, I thought, just stop! Just stop! Okay. Okay, this is a good question. A girl I mentor has confessed same-sex attraction to me, and I struggle as well. I have had thoughts about her. What do I do in that relationship? Confess? Distance myself? Nothing. Well, you need to do something. Don't take the nothing route. This is good. Let's just talk about this real quick. This will be a growing issue we're going to have on both sides of the fence, where because of the brokenness that is in our souls from the gay world, or the people who've chosen the gay path are kind of like the same way I look at a lot of college students who are, you know, you're overachievers. That's why you're in college, right? Yeah. So you tend to be performance-oriented. Okay, well, that's just something you probably all have in common to some extent, right? Because you're not the kids who didn't go to college. They're the underachievers, right? Like, okay, that was a gross overgeneralization, but you understand my point. So the ones who've chosen the gay path or have gone that path, they have some elements in common, and it's a largely this deep well of things that they desired as a child, but now that they're sexual beings, they're trying to find them in a sexual way. Does that make sense? Like, I understand that as a parent now, having raised little kids, that little kids understand unconditional love, and that's a good time to learn it. And if you don't learn it before you go through puberty, it's real hard, because now you have sexual glasses on the rest of your life. And so now you're trying to learn child concepts as an adult, as a sexual adult. You see what I'm saying? And that's a what? It's like bubblegum in your hair at that point. Like, you're trying to pick apart what is unconditional love. I don't know, because I keep confusing it with sexual love. But what I desire, like one person said in the last seminar, that she knows a gay man who doesn't even like gay sex. He just wants to be held by another man. I hear that all the time. Because it's about this hole in your heart that was left probably by a same-sex parent. And or abuse or any number of things. But and so you're trying to fill it, but now as a sexual being. And so so when we have these small groups now and we mentor people in the family of God, those places get touched because you start caring for someone, right? And this happened to me. I was being mentored, and I had a really strong attraction to my mentor. And I was so devastated. I was a young married woman. She was married, and I thought, you got to be kidding. And, you know, as for me, you know, Satan comes at me with all kinds of stuff. You know, you're poison. You're going to screw up everything. Just get away, you know, and because you're just waiting for the rejection. You're just waiting all the time. And and so you don't want to reject that person, and you don't want to distance yourself in terms of avoidance wise, but you do want to put your cards on the table, and you just got to bring it into the light. And that's what my situation was, where as much as my heart wanted to just hide and say it's not a big deal, minimize, avoid, the truth was anything done in the darkness grows. So we have to bring it into the light. And so I remember confessing it to her. It was such shame in my heart. Like, I'm so sorry, I'm screwing up this friendship, and I'm poison, you know? And her her response was to chuckle. And she was like, well, it's very flattering. but it's really not an issue for me. And it took so much power away from it. It just took the power away because I knew I was in a safe place. But we also brought our husbands into the situation too. We put in accountability elements. I didn't spend the night at her house. Her husband traveled a lot, and so there was opportunities for me to do that, and that would have blessed her, but we didn't do that. We didn't put ourselves in situations where I might feel tempted. But we didn't throw away the friendship either, okay? There is a way to handle this stuff, and there's a way to do it in community with good counsel and in prayer. But you have to be honest about your situation. And in different seasons, you can do certain things, and in other seasons, you can't. And you have to be honest about those things. The whole just suck it up or gut it out is forget about it. what do we tell someone who feels unable to leave the gay lifestyle and doesn't like the idea that lifelong celibacy is the only other option? Yes?
I just had a question.
Yeah. Yeah.
You set an example when your mentor was a safe place.
Yeah.
And on that question, I think you said something about...
They struggle as well.
They struggle as well. Does that change anything?
Well, I think all it changes is that has to be part of the equation when you're seeking counsel, when you're in prayer, when you're establishing boundaries, when you're... I don't feel like... you're not ever allowed to be somewhere near someone that you might have some attraction to. I don't think that's reality. There may be a season where you really need to step back from each other. But once again, it's this element of learning how not to live this isolated life. It's learning how to entrust ourselves to others. And in that way, our journey is the same as anyone else's who's experienced pain or been hurt. Is how do we trust God with our pain and allow Him to restore our soul so that we can be a part of the body of Christ? Because the hands and feet of Jesus are here. You are the hands and feet of Jesus. And yes, He does meet us in supernatural ways and showing up with wedding dresses. But He also, you know, there was a whole season where I just needed to sit at the feet of women and have them touch my head. And I don't know what was going on there, and it felt horrible to ask that. It was just horribly vulnerable to ask for that, but my heart yearned for it so desperately. And I just wanted to sit at their feet and just have them touch my head and pray for me. And it went to places, I don't even know what was going on in there, but it went into places in my heart that were so, the soil was so dry, and I so needed it. And it was such a good example of positive female interaction. And I think of the older men in our churches, and I think, go hug those young men. Just hug them. Just give them a chance to feel positive fatherly affirmation. And do not shy away from that. Who cares if they're strugglers? That's not. They need positive physical touch. That's the problem with it, is that you're in the bubblegum and the hair illustration, because the thing that you're so afraid of is the thing you actually need. You know, I think about my journey, and I think, so God took me, the gay girl, and turned me into the mom who hugs everybody. Does that seem like a good idea? No, it doesn't. It just seems like a bad idea, because how can I trust that? How can I, maybe I'm, you know, but in matter of fact, it gives God an amazing glory. So in God's eyes, it is a good idea. Because that doesn't make sense. And it's evidence of a work. And I know in my heart, when I'm hugging gals at my church, I'm not there for any other reason than to care for their hearts and to love them. But it also cares for my heart to be hugged. And so, so I think it just has to be part of the equation. This is a very, I'm gonna have to punt on this question because it's really involved. And if the person who wrote the celibacy question wants to talk to me afterwards, we can talk about it. But there's a lot of questions that go with that in terms of, are they Christians, are they not Christians, so on and so forth. What arguments, if any, convinced you homosexuality was a sin, or how do you respond to Christians who argue it isn't? Well, all I can really say on this one, because I just haven't spent any time with, like, pro-gay theology, because I kind of see it as like the Book of Mormon and stuff like that. Like, it's twisted scriptures, and I just won't expose myself to that stuff. And that's just me. Some people do, and they can argue it. Your pastor can probably argue quite well the issues associated with the poor hermeneutics associated with justifying homosexuality scripturally. But I just don't, and I don't really get into that. I was a non-believer, and I had a Bible, and I looked up the verses, and as a non-believer without the Spirit of God could see, oh, crap, this is not what God wants. It's funny. Children, when you talk to children about being gay, and my kids all know my story, and they always come back to you at some point and say, how does that work? Like, how do two boys have sex? You know, like, the biology speaks to a child. They don't have, like, it makes sense to them that it doesn't work, and it's not what God intended. As adults, we're so smart and intellectual that we can overcome that. But the biology actually is part of God's evidence of what his intentions were. The parts fit, the parts don't fit, and that speaks to a child. And sadly, it doesn't speak to most adults, and it probably should. I'm sorry if that in any way insults, but it is the truth of it. And as sad as I was to understand that, I could just see it so clearly in the Word of God. And you have to work really hard to get the scriptures to verify homosexuality. You can, but you can do that with a lot of things, honestly. And that's what's so dangerous about the Word of God, if you will, is that you can, if you come with an agenda, you can probably justify what you're doing. And that's why we've seen some really horrible things happen throughout all of history. In the name of God. All right, what is the best way to connect to a friend who isn't a believer and is homosexual? To ignore the fact they're homosexual in terms of, if they're not a believer, it doesn't, why would you expect a non-believer to not be gay? why would you expect a non-believer to believe anything that God believes morally? They don't have the Spirit of God in them. They're dealing with their pain the best way they know how. It's common. It's really common for us to get hooked up on that and to think that we need to lead people out of the gay life to Jesus. And it's like, well, no, actually, all we need to do is lead people to Jesus. That's really all we've asked to do. And so Jesus will do the gay stuff. And he may use you in that. But we have to be careful not to subject non-believers to Christian morality. Now, we know that in the same way, if we see a guy and a girl having sex or living together before marriage, we know that that's going to hurt them and it's going to wound their hearts. And we may encourage them to reconsider that decision because we know God's ways are better and God's ways, there's wisdom in God's ways. But that's all we would do in that situation, right? Like, we wouldn't reject the friendship because they were sleeping with their boyfriend. That would be ridiculous. And you would reject every single student you work with probably at that point, you know? Because we can't put our Christian morality on non-believers. They don't have the Spirit of God. It's not even kind to ask them to do that. Okay, I'm going to take one more question and then I'm going to close up. Whew. How would you go about talking to someone who doesn't believe homosexuality is sin? Okay, we did that. My friend has chosen a gay lifestyle and I'm not sure what to say to her. What do we suggest I say? I don't want to ignore it, but I don't want to be a critical Christian either. Yeah, and so let me just give a, this will be trite because we don't have a lot of time, and you can develop it with me if it feels overly trite, but if someone is a believer, it's a really different situation, okay? If someone is a non-believer, it's easy, okay? Because it's, that's where they're at and that's what they're doing. If a friend of mine was doing drugs and he was not a believer, I'd be like, man, drugs are bad. You sure you want to do those, man? And they'd be like, yeah, I do, because I cannot handle the pain of life and drugs help me. I'd be like, okay, I'm here, I love you. What else are you going to do, right? But if they're believers, it gets a lot more complicated, and those are hard to address because they're really specific, and it takes on all these nuances of, well, what's your relationship with them? How close are you to them? Is this a relative versus, you know, a friend? Or, you know, like, there's a lot of nuances at that point, and the counsel you would get would be very specific to your situation and even how the Lord would lead. The only principle I've pulled out of in all the conversations I've had with people is that the closer you are to someone, the less you can say. Meaning, like, if my brother was gay, he needs me to love him. That is my job, is to really love him and accept him. Now, my cousin might be able to come in and say, as a believer, say, do you really, you know, is this really what you want to do? Like, God seems to have some real specific thoughts about homosexuality. This is not what he wants for your life, you know? Whereas the closer you are relationship-wise, the harder it is to be that person who's trying to say, don't do this. Does that make sense? It's a very common thing in husband-wife situations, too. You know, my husband needs to know that I'm on his side, and I need to trust God to bring men into his life sometimes to address issues in his life. He needs to know he has somebody in his court. And so I need to be careful as to how much I say, you shouldn't be doing this, or you should do that, or, you know. Anytime we're taking on a critical element with people, we need to be very thoughtful about what does that person really need from me based on who I am in their life, versus, you know, somebody else. And parents deal with that a lot when their children embrace the gay world. I've talked to a lot of parents over the years, and it's very hard because there's obviously a lot of sense of failure in a parent when that happens, and even just a sense of loss because there is a chance they'll never have grandkids, and that scares a lot of parents, and so it's a whole other issue. All right, let me end with a little more worship because Andrea likes worship, and I love when music captures reality. And it's beautiful. I wonder if I'll ever find my way. I wonder if my life could really change at all. We're all on this journey together. We're all asking God for redemption. This earth, could all that is lost ever be found? Could a garden come up from this ground? Those are beautiful, honest questions that we all have to wrestle with, no matter what we're dealing with. You make beautiful things. You make beautiful things out of the dust. You make beautiful things. You make beautiful things out of us. I like that this is a triumphal song too, because it switches right here. All around, hope is springing up from this old ground. Out of
lost life is being found in you.
That's right. Life is found in Jesus.
You make beautiful things. You make beautiful things out of the dust. You make beautiful things. You make beautiful things out of us. You make beautiful things. You make beautiful things out of the dust. You make beautiful things. You make beautiful things out of us.
Amen. Amen. If you need to get up and go, I totally understand, but you're also welcome to stay. Thanks for coming, guys. You're welcome to stick around and ask them a couple more questions. I can stay for a little bit longer.